And now, the Hard Foul Sports Cleveland Podcast. Here are your hosts, Mike Tolsma, Adam Bennett, and Mike Arnold.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to the Hard Foul Sports Cleveland Podcast, episode number 2. We're back. We made it to the second week here in the Cleveland series of Hard Foul Sports, and I'm joined with Adam Bennett and Mike Arnold. Last week, you know, we kind of gave you an idea of what we want to do with the Hard Foul Sports Cleveland Podcast, and we're going to continue to do it and keep giving you guys great content, and we're really excited about it. Today's show, we have a lot planned for you. You know, Browns play the Chargers last night. Didn't go as most Cleveland fans would hope. Definitely a heartbreaking loss there. Our real big question for the day, our big discussion point is, you know, where do the Browns' problems come from? Does it run deeper than just the quarterback position that we've harped on so much? And we will flip over to basketball a little bit with training camp getting going. Tristan Thompson not in camp as of right now. And we know that LeBron James has had a little something to say about that as well. So, guys, thanks for having me back on, and I'm excited to get this going.
It's good to be with you guys again.
All right, so San Diego, Cleveland, 30-27, San Diego wins it on a late field goal. I watched most of this game after I watched my Bills look like junior varsity players. And, you know, it's hard. I like doing this because I'm not, you know, all in on the Cleveland sports scene. I'm a sports fan, you know, of course I follow it, but I'm not as emotionally invested as you guys are. So for me, as a football fan watching this game yesterday, I saw a lot of good things. I saw 432 yards of total offense out of the Cleveland Browns, who up to this point were pretty anemic on the offensive side of the football. Obviously, the way they lose is terrible. You know, an offsides lining up on the field goal attempt late in the fourth quarter with about, you know, 3-4 seconds left. And Lambeau misses the kick for San Diego, and it's obviously called back with a penalty. They get to retry. The kick is good. The game's over. But I really, as an outsider, I look at this game in a sense like this. Cleveland, do we really think that they are a playoff football team? Probably not. You can take a lot away from a three-point game on the road in San Diego, a team that a lot of NFL experts would say are probably a playoff team. You're playing Phillip Rivers. You're playing a great offense. And they played them tight the whole game. Adam, I'll start with you. You know, what are your initial takeaways? You know, are you pissed off? Are you okay with it? You know, where are you at right now?
Yeah, I'm not pissed. And, you know, for me, it's not because I take a lot of positives out of the game. The issue that I have is I've lived these losses, and I know Arnie has too, so many times that I don't get emotional about them anymore. And it's funny, I was watching the game at a friend's house, and my friend is not a Browns fan, and when they missed the field goal and we jumped off sides, I mean, he just had this look of horror on his face, and he looked back at me and he just shook his head and he said, I'm really sorry, man, I can't believe you're gonna lose this way. And you know, I honestly thought about it, I'm like, I'm not upset. I actually expected it. When they missed that field goal, I expected there to be some kind of flag or something to have gone wrong. And, you know, for me, it's just kind of the same old story. I think there are a lot of positives. We played well offensively, but in typical Browns fashion, when we play well on one side of the ball, the other side of the ball is terrible. And we find a way to lose games. And, you know, for all the talk that Mike Pettine has had, and I know we'll touch on him quite a few times in this podcast, I don't think he's changed the culture. You know, this is supposed to be an elite defense, a top five NFL defense coming into this year. And the offense got them 27 points on the road in San Diego, and you can't win the game. And even more so, you know, I understand San Diego's a playoff team and they've got a lot of talent, but they were playing with three starting offensive linemen out. I mean, that's a totally makeshift practice squad offensive line, and they got more pressure on our quarterback than we got on theirs. So, you know, I'm not encouraged. I'm not really discouraged because I came into the game with pretty low expectations. And like I said, it gets to the point, and I think there are a lot of Cleveland fans that can relate. And Arnie, I don't know where you how you feel about this, but I expect bad things to happen at the end of the game, and that's part of a culture that has been really bad for a really long time, and somebody's got to change that culture, and Mike Pettine hasn't done it so far.
Yeah, that was just the most Cleveland Browns loss imaginable, honestly, the way it went. I thought our offense played really well. I didn't have high expectations for them coming in, and McCown put up another, 350-yard game, two touchdowns. He completed more than 75% of his passes, which I thought was really positive. I thought Correll ran the ball well, and Duke Johnson just played, he did a good job both catching the ball and running it. So, I mean, those were really good things to take away from the offense. Barnage had a great game. I'm not as mad about the defense because Phillip Rivers just did Phillip Rivers things. He's so smart. Even though he is the weirdest release, I think, of any quarterback who's good in the NFL.
Ever. His weirdest release ever.
Yeah, I don't know how he does it. It looks more awkward every time he throws the ball, but he just outsmarts you. And, there's not much you can do in those situations. I mean, the offside penalty at the end was brutal, but are we the most penalized team? I feel like we have to be right now.
No. Mike Tolsma will chime in about Buffalo.
Buffalo?
we're just behind Buffalo, but I mean yeah, those are all, they're good points, and to me, we're in week five, we've got defensive players already openly questioning play calling to the public on defense, and this is a defense, and I wrote about this on hardfilesports.com, I am not a believer in Jim O'Neill at all, and last year, Mike Pettine, he split play calling with O'Neill. He was really involved defensively, and now he's not. And, the players are questioning play calls, and we're giving up 50-yard plays, it seems like, once a drive. And it's just, that's the frustrating thing for me. We've invested a lot of money in this defense, and Mike Pettine's, calling is on defense. And, you're right, Rivers is a good quarterback, and he gets the ball out quick. He's really smart. But there were some huge, huge gaps yesterday, and I just think, if you're a defensive head coach, you better get your act together on defense, or you cannot allow your defensive coordinator to continue to perform the way that he has, or else next year you're going to be a defensive coordinator yourself because he won't have this job anymore. So Mike's got to get involved, in my opinion. He's got to start getting back in the defensive classroom. He's got to start calling plays again. And again, everything on the offensive side, like you said with McCown, is very encouraging. But, when your elite defense is giving up 30 on the road, and especially, late in the game, they got anything they wanted late in the game. It's just, another difficult way to lose.
I think the big defensive stat that stands out to me is zero turnovers.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest problem with our defense. You're going to give up points to Phillip Rivers. You got to make Danny Woodhead fumble, or you got to make one of the receivers fumble, or you got to make him make one mistake.
Well, that's what it's all about. It's about, you have to find different ways to mask play calling and give different looks and confuse the offense to the point where Phillip Rivers is not a stupid man. He's a professional athlete. He's very smart. He's a good quarterback. You could argue that he's a top 10, top 8 quarterback. Like, he's not a slouch by any means, but the big thing that I see from this game is the fact that I'll read you two stat lines here. Josh McCown was 32 of 41 for 356 and two touchdowns, and he was just under 9 yards per attempt. That's a nice day. And you look at Phillip Rivers, he was 23 of 38 for 358 and three touchdowns, and he was a hair over 9 yards an attempt. Look at those two guys. Come on, guys, there isn't that big of a difference between Phillip Rivers, who I just got done praising as a top 10 quarterback, and Josh McCown, who's been a dumpster fire for the last 20 starts.
Yeah.
I just don't understand how the defense and Mike Pettine and Jim O'Neill cannot take advantage of situations where their offense does show up. Because, listen, the Cleveland Browns are not going to be an offensive juggernaut. We know that. What scares me and what frightens me about this Browns team is if you go throughout the game and how the flow of the game, the Browns never really, of course, got out to a big lead. They were up 3-0, they were up 10-7, they were up, they were down 13-10 before they tied it. They never had an opportunity to run away with the game, and that's where the defense comes in. You have to make a play. and they didn't make the play.
And I think the four field goals were a big issue. The fact that we were in field goal range four times and only, you know, we couldn't capitalize on any of those situations.
That's the story with the Browns, too. I mean, it's kind of the same old story that it's been ever since the, you know, the Pat Shurmur era is, you know, if we do have drives, we don't finish drives. But then, you know, if we do have great offensive output, I mean, look, bottom line is when you get that kind of game from Josh McCown, you have to win that game. You have to.
You better.
Because
you better.
He's not going to play like that all year. There's no question. We don't have enough playmaking talent to play like that on the offensive side of the ball all season long. And the Chargers, you know, if we're being fair, they're pretty poor in the secondary, too. They're not a very good pass defense team. They've been torched, in fact, in a couple of games. But, I mean, you know, you get that kind of game on the road, and it's a big bounce-back game after the dumpster fire that was the Oakland game, and you don't take advantage. I mean, and I think that's the part that it's kind of numbing as a Browns fan because, you know, I leave that game yesterday thinking, you know, we did a lot of really good things and I'm really encouraged, but oh, by the way, we still lost. And it's just kind of the same story that we've had. And we mentioned it last podcast, the three of us, you know, I'm tired of battling and competing and being really close, but not there yet. You know, we were at that stage 4 years ago and we're still at that stage now. And we even had to get back to that stage after being totally owned against Oakland in a lot of statistical categories. And you know, we almost had to mount an incredible comeback to even get back into that game. So I just, you know, I'm tired of all that stuff. I want to go over the hump. I want to get the job done. I want to actually see results. And I think a lot of fans feel that way. And I'm sure there are some that don't and that are kind of happy with the way that we play. There are a lot of positives to take away from it. But again, when we had to make plays to get the job done, we couldn't make plays. And until this team can play in clutch time, they're never going to go anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of you put it perfectly, you know. And I think the most discouraging thing about losing a game like that, and I want to get into, you know, that field goal at the end there, but the most discouraging thing about all this is Cincinnati's 4-0. And then other than that, you know, Pittsburgh's 2-2, and they don't have Roethlisberger for 3 more weeks. Baltimore's 1-3, and they look like hell. And then we got Cleveland also at 1-3. And where do you put Cleveland right now? You know, are they the worst team in the division? Because Baltimore looks terrible. Are they are they behind Pittsburgh still with a backup quarterback and Michael Vick running the show in Pitt? I mean, obviously Cincinnati's in a league of their own in this division. I mean, Cincinnati's going to win this division right now, and I don't think there's any question about it. They just jumped out to a 2-game lead on the second-place team in Pittsburgh, and they already got a 3-game lead on Baltimore and Cleveland. But that's why it comes down to this, you know. It's 27-27 at the end of the fourth quarter, and obviously, you know, I'm watching the game, and I think that the kick's going to be made right away. I don't think, you know, they're professional kickers. It was a makeable field goal. And Lambeau misses the kick. How in the world do you get called for an offside penalty in a situation like that? Is that just being unprepared? Is that a lack of focus? What do you think that is?
I don't think it's either, honestly. I mean, he's trying to make a play. It was a mistake. I mean, it's not like he's... I don't think it was that terrible of a jump or anything like that, but it's one of those situations where he has to learn. I mean, there's nothing he can do about it. I don't... You know, I think Rex was... what stood up for his players for being heavily penalized, saying they're trying to make plays, they're trying to do something, you know. And I think that's a good way to look at it, not think they're intentionally doing it or anything like that.
No, I mean, there's no question he was trying to make a play. The ironic thing is it's Tremont Williams, who played for the Green Bay Packers at a very high level for a long time. And he comes to Cleveland, and by the way, he's playing phenomenally well in the secondary. I mean, he's our best corner right now, way ahead of what Hayden's done. But he's the guy that makes the mistake, and it's just kind of been the theme that you come to Cleveland and you stop being a Green Bay Packer caliber player and you start becoming a Cleveland Brown. And, you know, I think that was the one penalty. We had 12 penalties. That's the one that you don't really blame him or the coaches or anybody. He's trying to get a jump to make a block, because as you said, Tolles, it's a 39-yard field goal. You know, chances are he's going to make it. You got to try to block it. He came pretty close to blocking it too. But you know, so I don't really fault that one. I fault the 11 penalties beforehand. It's our second game this year that we've had 12 penalties, and that's coaching. And, you know, Tolles, you know this from Rex in Buffalo. You know, if you're not disciplined, it's going to show up on the field in big-time situations and really hurt your teams. And Pettine comes from that Rex Ryan tree where, hey, you know, we want our guys to fight out there. And we, you know, we'll take a penalty here or there, but we want them to be fighters. And that's all fine and good, but, you know, 12 penalties in a game, and, you know, Buffalo had 17 yesterday. That's way, way, way too many. And the problem with the Browns penalties is they're coaching penalties because I think Terry Pluto wrote either yesterday or today for Cleveland.com, more than half are pre-snap penalties.
Yeah, those are penalties that are completely unforced errors. Like, you are in complete control of those situations, and it can't happen. And I completely agree with you on that. And I want to cut in because this is where I disagree a little bit with you guys, because I understand the idea of, you know, make a play, get a good jump, but the game is also on the line here. You got to be absolutely sure. And it's easy for me to say because, you know, when I'm watching on TV and I watched all the early games, the Browns played at 4 o'clock last night, and I watched all the 1 o'clock games, and it obviously was not a good day for kickers. I don't have the number in front of me, but kickers were missing field goals all across the league yesterday, and I'm not saying that there's any sort of, you know, correlation between this, but kicking is down right now, and for whatever reason it is, the kickers haven't been as reliable. If you're in a situation where it's going to be the last play of the game, you better damn well make sure that you're not going to get penalized there. I understand the whole making a play thing, but at the end of the day, it's easy for me to say, well, guess what? That penalty cost you the game. At least you can go to overtime and have a chance to win. Sometimes there's too much aggression. I'm seeing it with the Bills all the time. 17 penalties, 3 personal fouls, roughing the passer, chop block, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't stop. Those type of penalties are what destroy you. We're talking about an offsides penalty where, I don't know, it's so hard to get an idea of, is that the right decision to try and get that jump, or is it a better decision to try and just beat your guy once the snap's made?
Yeah, I don't know if it's the right decision, but I can tell you it's definitely a Cleveland Browns way to lose. Of all the ways that we've seen losing, that's one of them, because again, you know, you have the emotion of, oh my God, he missed it, and you're really happy for about 0.2 seconds, and then you realize, oh shit, here's
a flag.
We're going back, and you know, I mean, I didn't even, to be honest with you, I didn't watch the second kick. Like I said, I was at a friend's house in Orchard Park after going to the Bills game, and I walked out after the first kick missed, and I found out there was a penalty. I didn't even need to see it. I didn't need to be told that it was going in. I knew. So it's just, it's one of those things that, you're right, Tolles. I think, you know, you can't have that penalty in that situation. And Arnie, you're right. The dude's just trying to make a play for his team, but it's the Cleveland Browns, and plays aren't there to be made. Apparently it's just find another way to lose, I guess.
Yeah, that kind of, I guess, will lead me into our big discussion point for the day. You know, the last few weeks, Adam, you've been very vocal about it on HardFoulSports.com about the quarterback situation, and, you know, when Johnny Manziel got benched after winning a game for the Browns, you know, you were vocal that Josh McCown was a poor choice, and I'm not going to say that changes. I still would play Johnny Manziel right now, but you're talking about a game where McCown plays really well, or probably up to the most, you know, you get the most out of him, and you still come out on the losing end. It really starts to bring question to the franchise in general. Where are these problems coming from? You know, it definitely runs deeper than the quarterback. We're talking about penalties. I've been talking about penalties for the last 48 hours now between two podcasts. And, you know, is it penalties? Is it, you know, the coaching? Is it a combination of everything? You know, where is the main issue with this team? Because I really do think it runs deeper than the quarterback situation. And, Arnie, we'll start with you.
Well, I really think that the biggest problem right now is just it's going to take time for a lot of the new guys to assimilate. I think Sheldon is one of the examples where he's playing, you know, he's losing most of his individual matchups week to week, but I think down the road he's going to be a big reason our defense becomes what it is. Our line, I think, needs more time to get more continuity. And I think we just, you know, need to either get Dwayne Bowe back on the field somehow or get him working, or we need to get actual weapons. And I think the quarterback play, as we saw this week, can be good. I think the last 2 weeks we've had 350-yard passer. I think Johnny, when he's ready, they'll put him in, and I think he will be successful. But I think it's a lot deeper than quarterback play, yeah.
You know, I agree with you that I still think we should play Johnny. I mean, Josh is playing well, and so as long as he plays like this, I guess I'll be okay with it. But again, you know, we're not going anywhere here. We're 1-3. We've still got a brutal part of the schedule coming up, and you know, we've got a playmaker sitting on the bench that I at least want to figure out going into next year if he's the guy. That being said, you know, the problems run way, way deeper than that. I'm seeing problems with the coaching, unquestionable problems with the coaching. There are problems with the defensive scheme. You know, 2 weeks ago there were problems with offensive play calling. Now, at the end of this week, you've got defensive players, which, by the way, you know, for all the hate that we put on Pat Shurmur over his 2 years here, he never had one player question his play calling in public, not once. And he was about as bad as it gets. And these players on Mike Pettine's defense are openly questioning him and Jim O'Neill. That's a problem. That's a significant problem moving forward. And you just saw what happened in Miami. Joe Philbin got fired today, in part because players on his defense were questioning his coordinator and the play calling, and they stopped playing for him. So now you've got to be concerned, are the players bought in? You know, Mike Pettine flat out called out Joe Hayden today and said, well, it was his call. You know, he had a finger, and we thought he could go, and it was his call. He didn't want to go, so we didn't play him. And I know Joe's not going to take that very kindly. So, you know, you really have to concern yourselves now with, okay, are they going to stop playing for him? You know, has he lost the locker room, at least the defensive side of the locker room? And there's certainly, there is a problem with scheme. There's no question about that. And again, I'll say this every week that he's here until he fixes it. Mike Pettine, since leaving the shadow of Rex Ryan, his run defense is 28th in Buffalo, 32nd last year, and now 32nd so far this year. And the Chargers, again, they had a makeshift, terrible, terrible offensive line that they were starting yesterday, and they still ran it all over us, and you know they threw it pretty well too. So there are problems defensively, which means as an organization we've got a big problem because we have invested a ton of money on that side of the ball, and we don't have anything to show for it. We're not getting any pressure on the quarterbacks. Again, like my friend Nick said at last week's game, our linebackers are some of the worst in the league. Arnie's right. They need time to gel, but you know the majority of this defense is back from what they had last year. But, I mean, I'm looking at the stats now from Kevin Klebs on Twitter, and Kevin is, if you're not following him, he's the best Cleveland sports follow other than our account. But Kevin, you know, he points it out, Browns defense this year in stats, 32nd in total yards. They're 31st against the run. They're 22nd versus the pass. They're 20th in points given up. They're 29th in yards per pass. And they're 29th in opposing passing rating. So that's a defense that had plans of being a top five defense coming into the season. And they're struggling big time. So there's a big problem there. There's still a problem with our offensive line. They still can't run block. You know, they utilized, I'll tell you this, the offensive coaching last week was some of the most innovative, or I should say yesterday, was some of the most innovative that I've seen in a long time. So I have hope for John DeFilippo because they utilized Duke Johnson very well. They got him out in space. They got Crowell out in space. But the traditional run game, they utilized those guys in the passing game because they had to because nobody can run block. Nobody. And this is a line that, you know, we've got like hundreds of millions of dollars into here. So until they start playing at a level they're capable of, and until the defense rises up, you know, we're not going to be a good team. And again, Mike Pettine better hope the defense rises up or he's going to be out of a job because he's awfully stubborn and awfully cocky. He said today in his press conference, well, I'm not going to step in and help Jim O'Neill, and we're not going to make any changes. You know, we'll just fix it. Well, you know, we've been trying to fix it for 4 weeks now, and not doing a very good job. So unless he does fix it, he's out of a job. Yes, the answer to the long form answer, Tolles, there are many, many problems with this team, and they go far beyond the quarterback position.
I think what is the most alarming about what you just said, the thing that I take the most out of right there is you questioning if the players are going to stop playing for Mike Pettine and his coaching staff. And this is, like, we're talking about this in week four. And what's very, very alarming about all that is the fact that the AFC is very bad. It seems to be a running theme that, like, the East in all sports is always terrible. And there is no, you know, this is just another example of that. You know, if you're talking about the wild card picture, and it's never too early to talk about that, you know, we have the New York Jets, they're an anomaly. Forget about them. They have Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback. I've seen this soap opera before. The Jets are not going to be good.
They'll fold.
They're 3-1 right now, but I don't buy it. You know, then we got the Bills, the Raiders, the Chargers, and the Steelers without Ben Roethlisberger sitting at 2-2. Tennessee had a bye, but they're Tennessee. They have a rookie quarterback. Granted, Mariota's playing well, but he's a rookie quarterback. He's going to definitely not, I don't think, carry the load. They're 1-2.
Browns.
You know, there you go. And, you know, Kansas City, a team that a lot of people thought were going to be a pretty good team out west, they're 1-3. Baltimore's 1-3. Miami, who some people thought was going to be a challenge to the Patriots in the AFC, they look like the worst team in the AFC. They look terrible. They lost their head coach. They're a mess. Like, the Browns are 1-3, and they're by no means out of the discussion after 4 weeks. And yet we're sitting here talking about how the players might not believe in the coaching staff anymore. That's a problem within itself. You know, you want to talk about where does the problem start, it's got to be the coaches, without question.
Arnie, are you at that point? I mean, I know I am, and I'm obviously pessimistic about this whole thing. Are you at that point with the coaching staff yet, or do you still think that they have an opportunity to turn it around?
I don't think they're going to turn around this year at all, and I think at the end of the year they're going to be gone. Especially, I just don't think we're going to have a good enough record to justify keeping them. And I don't know if that's the right choice or not. There's a gauntlet of a schedule this year. And if we keep firing coaches every year or two, then there's no chance of us getting continuity. And that's, I mean, just been an issue for years. I mean, since they came back.
And that's what you need. You need that continuity, because without that, if you can't build anything, I mean, I like doing the show with you guys because we have so much in common between our fan bases. The problem with the Bills, they've had new coaches every 2 years, every 3 years. And most of their choices have been C-plus choices. You know, they've been everybody's hand-me-downs. And that's been the issue in Buffalo, and it's the same problem in Cleveland. Now, the only difference with Cleveland is that they are definitely far more open to giving unproven guys a chance. You know, Mike Pettine, I definitely never thought was going to be head coach material, and here he is, the head coach in the league. You know, Chud, I didn't even know who the hell he was when he was hired.
Terrible.
You know, Pat Shermer, same thing. Ugh. Like, all these coordinators and guys, like, Cleveland's giving him a chance, and I think Cleveland's hoping that they can strike gold eventually on one of these guys, and they find, like, that next Bill Belichick or something like that, not to bring up, you know, names that you guys had on your staff at one point, but, I want to wrap up the Browns discussion with this. If they are, you two as fans are sitting here talking like the season's over, and that's so crazy to me because you're a game out, but I think that really goes to show you how little there is to look at this team in terms of even talent-wise. I mean, like, we talked last week about playmaking. You know, and who on this offense is a playmaker? Now, did Duke Johnson maybe establish himself as a playmaker? Listen, I'm not taking one game that's way too small of a sample size to say, hey, he's the guy. But at the same time, at least there's something to look at. And I'm just this is fun because I'm looking at it and I'm listening to you guys talk about this, and it's like, oh, the season's over, 1-3. And I'm like, well, you guys are only a game out. But again, I think it really does go down to the fact that the coaches stink, the players kind of stink. And there's a lot of underachieving going on right now, and the 1 week you get great quarterback play out of your stinky quarterback, you lose. So I definitely can understand it.
Well, listen, I just want to say this real quick about continuity, and I'm very sensitive about this because I absolutely agree, and we said it on the Buffalo podcast when I joined you guys last week, Tolles. Continuity is a great thing, right? And it's the driver of success for all of the successful teams. The good teams, they all have continuity. So, yeah, you've got to have continuity. But at the same time, you have to have continuity with the right people. And if you don't have the right people, continuity, I mean, it's just another way of losing for multiple years if you don't have the right people involved. And that's where I'm trying to come at this with Pettine. I mean, I was a big Mike Pettine fan last year. I thought he did great in his first year. And I thought, you know, Kyle Shanahan did phenomenally well with the offense. And I'm thinking, all right, you know, we have something to build from. Well, Shanahan leaves, and now Pettine, you know, who knows what he's doing. I don't even know if his headset's turned on during games because he's got the same facial expression for the entire game, and he just stands there with his arms folded. I mean, it's terrible. But continuity with him, what I'm trying to decide is he the right guy? Because let's be honest, of the Browns coaches that we've had since 99, we had Chris Palmer, and this is off the top of my head, by the way, Chris Palmer, Butch Davis, Romeo Crennel, Pat Shurmur, Rob Chudzinski, and now Mike Pettine, and Eric Mangini. Yeah, so there's seven right there. Of those seven, name one of them that went on to be a head coach. Name one of them that went on to be a successful head coach after the Browns.
Romeo Mangini was the only retread.
Yeah, he was the only one with coaching experience, head coaching experience. But none of them went on. Romeo Crennel got an interim stint at Kansas City for the end of 1 year, and then he went into the next year and totally sucked. And now, by the way, he's in Houston, and they've got, like, the world's worst defense ever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the thing. You know, continuity's great, but you've got to get the right people for continuity. We've never had the right people. I think from a pure coaching standpoint, Eric Mangini was by far the best coach that we had, and it's not even close. But, you know, he was also into personnel and picking his own players, and he set us light years back in that department. So you have to find a really good personnel guy, and you have to find a really good head coach, and you've got to put the two together, and then you have continuity. And when you find the right guy, you know, you give them 10-year contracts. You know, look, the first coach that makes the playoffs here and, you know, gets the team to play, like, marginally well on offense and defense, I'm all for it. Give that man an 8-year contract, and then I won't complain anymore. And that's the thing. I don't want to be labeled as a coach complainer because, like, I get really upset at these people. I'm a huge Buckeyes fan, as you guys know, and there are people just, like, hammering Urban Meyer on Twitter. Oh, he doesn't know what he's doing, and he's not a very good coach. The man has freaking 3 national championships, all right, at the highest level of the sport, and that buys him a bunch of time in my, like, I will never complain about what he does. I may get frustrated from time to time, but I'm never going to say, well, he's not the right guy for the job because he's already proven it. And so I want to love a coach. I want to love a coaching staff, and I want to love a GM. I want to say, you know what, I'm all in with these guys, and I'm not going to agree with everything that they do, but let's give them a chance. But I don't think Mike Pettine's that right guy, and I've seen a lot of qualities that Pettine has in some of the other really bad coaches that we've had before. So, you know, we can talk about how good continuity is, but, you know, if you don't have great people at the helm, look at Mark Shapiro and the Indians. And he was there for, like, what, you know, 20 years? And how'd that work? We made the playoffs 3 times. Well, that's great. And you had continuity, but you never got over the hump. And so, Arnie, that's just my thing with continuity. You've got to find the right people to get continuity started. We haven't found the right people yet.
The biggest thing with that is, what proven head coach is going to come to Cleveland to coach us? You know, it's not like there's successful coaches just sitting out there without a job right now looking to go to Cleveland. And that's why I don't think they've made the right hires, but we're going to have to keep hiring coordinators until one works. And that's the difficult part about it. You're going to have to find something until you get that right proven commodity. I don't know if, I don't know if Pettine's the right guy or not. I think that if we fire him, that he's going to get fired at the end of the year, and I don't know if it's the right decision, but I think we really need to look, the Buffalo's defense was 28th against the run in Pettine's year there, and we're struggling with it now. You know, it's predictable, but playoffs that we really expect coming in.
I think that's the problem with the coaching. You know, you can go all the way back to Butch Davis when the Browns made the playoffs in 2004. Like, was he the right guy? I mean, he was like 25 and 34, maybe. I'm not completely positive, but he was decent for the Browns in that stint.
Well, he was. You know, the thing about him, Toles, is he was a really good coach. He's a lot like Mangini. The first 2 years, he was a phenomenal, great X's and O's guy, but then he made a power play, and he took over personnel with Pete Garcia, who was a guy he worked with at Miami in college. And once they took over personnel, it was over.
I mean, he got fired after a 3-8 start the year after they made the playoffs. But like, they made the playoffs that year with like a quarterback controversy, of Tim Couch and Kelly Holcomb.
Yeah, yep.
And neither of those guys are even close to being as talented as Johnny Manziel is, who's sitting on your bench. So, you know, like the coaching thing, it obviously, you know, listen, it's kind of sometimes luck of the draw. You know, are you going to get, you know, look, hey, when Chip Kelly was available the same year Petten was hired, I'm sure everybody wanted Chip Kelly. How's that working out for Philadelphia right now? You know, Chip Kelly looks like he was figured out after it took 2 years, but 2 years, one playoff berth, a couple 10-win seasons, and this year they look terrible. And what's the key ingredient in all this? He runs the personnel. I think sometimes, you know, you can't have all that control either. The Mike Petten thing is, it's hard to say with Petten, because Mike Petten has this demeanor about him that it really, you really want to like him, right? Like, he seems like a tough coach, and he seems like he's going to get the best out of his players, but he just makes these knucklehead decisions sometimes. And granted, I understand that the coordinators are calling the plays, and Petten's, and he's kind of, you know, moderating everything. But at the end of the day, this is your coaching staff. So any decision that's made, it comes back to you. And I don't think Petten's used to that yet, because he was able to get away with all this stuff in Buffalo and New York when Rex Ryan and Doug Marrone were the head coaches, because if he made a poor decision, he's not getting asked about it. All right, Rex Ryan's getting asked about it, or Doug Marrone's getting asked about it. Now all of a sudden it's coming back to him, and everybody's looking at him like, dude, are you going to make an adjustment or no? And he's like, oh, well, you know, that's what my coordinators are for. It's very interesting, and it's one of those things where this is an interesting team to me, because like I'm not shy to tell you guys, and of course I don't follow the Browns as much, but I just don't think they're that talented.
No, you're right.
And I want to see how much he gets out of this team for having a lack of talent. I mean, if they go 8-8 this year, I don't know how you fire him. I'm sure he does get fired.
I don't think they will. Not for 8-8. I mean,
I don't think
they get fired for 6-10.
No.
There's so much pressure, though, guys, to make the playoffs every year, and like it's like a ticking time bomb. You know, time is money, and every year you guys, we're in the same situation in Buffalo. Every year that you miss the playoffs, you know, you guys haven't been there in 10-11 years. We haven't been here in Buffalo in 15. You know, if it's one guy can't get it done, it's like a quarterback. If he can't get it done, all right, on to the next one. And that's kind of where I'm interested to see what happens along the rest of the way with Petten. But let's turn the page to some more great news coming out of Cleveland with the old Tristan Thompson holdout. And let me just put it like this. Is Tristan Thompson worth the money that he wants?
No.
Okay, that's what I thought. Because, like, I just don't understand why. And I mean, what blows my mind about the Cavs is that LeBron James, I understand they have the same agent, but he is just, like, pressuring management to completely crumble the Cavs situation in Cleveland by giving this guy a max contract. I don't understand. You know, let him hold out. Fine, give him the qualifying offer. He's going to have to take it, and he could be a UFA next year.
He can't take the qualifying offer anymore. It expired when he didn't take it midnight a couple days ago.
Excellent. So now what? What do you do now?
He could be the only two teams that could offer him who are not the Cavs right now are the 76ers and the Trailblazers, both teams who are a bit rebuilding, and both teams who just don't need him, don't want him, and he wouldn't be good for them. The thing I don't like, I mean, you brought up the whole LeBron thing, and if anyone follows me on Twitter, which I know Adam does, tells you need to, I'm really critical of the way LeBron acts off the court, and, well, his personality on the court, because he's very passive-aggressive, and it's a lot of, I have to get what I want, and it's really annoying. Like, I don't know if you guys saw the Instagram he posted like Get It Done or something like that. It has a picture of him and Tristan, and his agency and Tristan all posted that picture on the same night. And it's like, he wants a contract where he's getting more money than Kyrie Irving, which is just the most ridiculous thing to me. You know, 8 points and 8 rebounds and average pick and roll defense and no rim protection shouldn't get you $94 million.
Right, that's the picture I was referring to, and Adam, I'm going to turn to you for this. I mean, I understand that the salary cap isn't as big of a concern because it's going to blow up in the next couple of years with the big TV money, but you got to think about who you're giving this money to. I mean, like, we're talking about a front court in Cleveland that is very, there's a logjam there. I mean, you got Varejao, who's probably only got another year left anyway, but Kevin Love's obviously there for the long term. You know, I think LeBron is far better playing at the four than he is the three. You know, Mozgov is there for at least another year or two. Like, is the money going to justify the minutes that he's going to expect to play? Like, the rotation that they had heading into the playoffs last year, when they looked like an absolute force to be reckoned with before everybody got hurt, you know, it worked out to the point where, yeah, Thompson had to play more because Kevin Love got hurt, but I don't think that small sample size in the playoffs justifies him trying to get a max deal. That just doesn't make any sense to me. And on top of that, he's a businessman, yes. You know, as a professional athlete, you need to be a businessman first and foremost. But there has to be some sort of team camaraderie here. And that's what I'm not seeing. I'm seeing a very, very selfish Tristan Thompson right now. I see a guy that's obviously more hungry for a paycheck than a championship ring. And if I'm a Cavs fan, I'm not happy about that. I'm definitely, definitely concerned as to, you're really seeing Thompson's true colors right now.
This is the first time, Tolles, you and I totally disagree. And I'm going to just tell you a couple things about it. Number one, the reason that LeBron is getting in on this and is pushing the Cavs so hard is because LeBron, you absolutely know, he gets a cut out of that agency, which he started. I mean, Rich Paul is the guy who runs it, and Maverick Carter. But LeBron, you know, he's in on that financially. So, you know, obviously LeBron wants the most money he can get, and it's another way to get him some more money on top of what he's already making. I don't see it as selfish on Tristan's part at all. And I've had the luxury of meeting Tristan, and he's a really, really good guy. He's a guy you want in the locker room. He's a humble guy. He's not like a lot of NBA players, and I don't see him as being all for himself at all. What I see is they're evaluating the contracts that some of the free agents this year received because the salary cap is going to skyrocket next year. And, you know, you look at some of the max deals, and I could run through a bunch of names this year that players that got max contracts, and my eyebrows raised and my jaw hit the floor, and I'm like, are you kidding me?
Chris Middleton?
Yeah, I mean, some of the Detroit contracts that they handed out. So, you know, Tristan, they look at that and they're saying, well, if they're worth that kind of money, I'm worth that kind of money. Let me tell you this, I guarantee you David Blatt wants to get this contract done because from a coaching standpoint, he was most of the time, obviously other than LeBron, he was the best player on the floor for either team throughout the playoffs, especially when Kyrie and Kevin were both hurt. You know, obviously LeBron's number one. Tristan was number two. And there is no price tag that you can put on his ability to get defensive rebounds and make sure that the opposition isn't extending possessions. He's phenomenal in that regard. Is he worth a max contract? No. You're absolutely right on that. I mean, no. You look at his game, you look at his numbers, you look at his averages, you look at his minutes. None of that adds up to a max deal. It just doesn't. That being said, a lot of players that received max deals this offseason, there's no way that they should receive max deals. And most of those guys were front court guys because good front court players in the NBA are hard to find. Is Tristan a max player? No. Is that why there's a holdout? Yes. But I don't blame Tristan for saying, well, look at my value compared to these other players. I want to be locked up long term in Cleveland, compete on a yearly basis for championships, and I don't blame the Cavs for saying, look, you're not a max player. I'm sorry, you're just not. But he is worth a lot of money, and his numbers, he's the quintessential guy where, you know, you watch him play, And he does so much more than what's going to be in the stat book. He really does. And he wears opposing front court players down. I mean, he just does. And all of a sudden, they become worse on offense because they've got to, you know, they've got to hit bodies with Tristan Thompson all game on the boards, and Tristan's wearing them down on defense. And, you know, so the impact that he has on the game, if you looked at it from an advanced metric standpoint, is phenomenal. And he's not a max player, but I don't think it's selfish from him at all. I think a deal will get done. I do agree with Arnie, LeBron's passive aggressiveness. Look, LeBron wants to get paid because he's going to get a cut out of this. And Tristan's his buddy. So he doesn't, you know, LeBron still doesn't love Dan Gilbert. And he doesn't care if Dan Gilbert's going to have to pay way, way more on the luxury tax than any owner ever should. So he doesn't care. He wants the deal to get done too. So I don't see as much of the anger in it as some fans have. And there's a lot of anger in Cleveland right now over this. But, I can see both arguments. And I certainly do see his side too.
I don't think it's Tristan necessarily holding out. I think Rich Paul told him, this is the money I'm going to get you. And he's just listening to his agent.
Exactly.
I think that's more of the situation with him. That's why I'm not saying I'm mad at Tristan either. I just think the situation is ridiculous and they should understand that if they haven't gotten the max by now, they're not going to get it. They've lost almost all their leverage. And if they take 5 years, $80 million, that's more than fair. If the total luxury tax for the bill that would be if he got a max contract would end up, that contract would cost, ended up being like a quarter of $1 billion for Tristan.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, so if Thompson has this much value, which I'm not, like, listen, I have eyes. I know the game of basketball. I watched all the NBA playoffs. I see what Thompson did on the court and the impact he had. If he is going to demand a max salary, and whether he gets that or not, it is going to be irrelevant to my question, because if he is the playmaker that he is, and he is as important as he is to this Cleveland team, why go out and re-up Kevin Love, who looked like he didn't fit in? Well, when you can just slide Thompson. And I understand they're different players. They provide different things. They bring different things to the table. But is Tristan Thompson in your starting five right now? Or is it Kevin Love and Mozgov up front?
You have to start Kevin Love and Mozgov. I mean, Love is top three in his position in the league, talent-wise, especially offensively.
Right, but I'm talking fit, though, too.
I think the offense stalled a lot without Love there. That's when we went isolation heavy, and it was kind of painful to watch. There was a lot of LeBron long twos, and I mean, you saw how hard it was, you know, after, you know, how good the offense looked in the Boston series compared to the next two. And I agree, granted, there's a talent difference, but it just flowed so much better.
Yeah, it's a typical offense defense signing. I mean, you sign Love for offense because this offense, when the big three, when they were healthy, the Cavs were something like 30-3 in the last 33 games that they were together. I mean, they were rolling at the end of the year and in playoff. I mean, and if they stayed healthy, that championship last year was ours. I mean, I really do believe that. So offensively, you obviously have to re-sign Love. And they were starting to get to a point where they were using Love in the right way. But Thompson, you know, that's not his game. And you're right, Tolles. I mean, from a minutes perspective, he's not going to spend enough time on the floor that you would say that's a max player. But I'll tell you this, if somebody went to Dan Gilbert today and said, okay, you know what, you may have to give Tristan Thompson the max, but it's going to get you two championships, he'll do it. He doesn't care if it costs $250 million in luxury tax. And, you know, the Cavs are making enough money right now, from a revenue sharing standpoint, from the money that they're making in revenue themselves, from an international revenue standpoint, from jersey sales and stuff like that, they can cover that kind of money. But Gilbert might lose some money in the short term to get the championship that this city deserves. And so, you know, I don't have a problem with an owner being aggressive and saying, you know what, I'm going to pay him a little more. And I think that's why, look, if it's true that Rich Paul said, I'm going to offer the Cavs a three-year max year contract or a three-year max contract deal, I would have taken it for Cleveland because you're on the hook for 3 years and then you can get out of it. But you've also got to remember Andy Varejão and his awful terrible contract is off the books at the end of this season. So there's some relief coming in that regard a little bit. But, this is a great problem to have. I mean, we just spent 35 minutes of this podcast talking about a team with no talent And now we're talking about a team with so much talent that, well, do we give another guy the max deal? Because, you know, if you have enough talent, you do everything that you can to keep that talent. And I can guarantee you that David Blatt will put his fist on the table and join the chorus of people that are saying, I don't care what it takes, get Tristan back. Because he is that important. And like Arnie said, when Love was out, I mean, this offense was god-awful. It was bad. And it became the old Cleveland offenses with LeBron, where it was everybody spread, and we'll try to screen the ball, and LeBron, you know, do your thing. But when Love was in, I mean, this was a spread, back-cutting, really high-octane offense. And Tristan, look, they'll play, especially in the playoffs, it'll be a lot of two guards, you know, Kyrie, you know, insert another guard here, and then LeBron, Kevin, and Tristan. That's what it'll look like. Because Tristan can totally take care of the paint himself. And he's a good interior defender, and he's a phenomenal rebounder. And, you know, good luck with teams. That's like when Golden State went small and beat us in the finals. So, you know, he'll find his value. Will it ever equate to a max contract value? No. But, you know, look at some of the other players that were signed this offseason. They'll never equate to a max contract value either. So I don't have a problem with that at all.
Yeah, I mean, I guess why I question that point about the five if they make it back to the finals is because I'm still stuck on how much of an impact Mozgov and, you know, Smith and Shumpert really had on the it really seemed, and more so Mozgov than anybody. He really solidified that starting lineup when he was brought in last year, and I mean. You know, I watched the Knicks when Mozgov was there and the Nuggets, and I never saw him play as well as he did that second half 75% or whatever it was of the season that he was in Cleveland. It's to the point where he played so well. I mean, he could be a top 10 center in the league next year, but you're talking about, of course, who's around him, and is he going to get the minutes in a loaded front court? And I don't think he does. But I think that I don't want to discount the value that Mozgov brings to that front court as a rim protector, as a guy who can finish down low. And, I mean, let's face it, Mozgov at the free throw line is also not as big of a liability as Thompson is. Thompson's gotten better over the last couple of years, but, I mean, it was pretty ugly for a while there with him. It's a difficult thing to have, but it's a very good thing to have. And a lot of it's going to be on David Blatt and LeBron as a leader of the team to kind of keep everyone in check. You know, make sure that everybody knows what the end game here is, and that's to get a ring on your finger and bring a championship to Cleveland.
No doubt about that. Can't argue with that at all.
Perfect. This is what we're going to try and do. You know, Hardfall Sports Cleveland, if you're not following, make sure you check it out at HFS Cleveland. Adam runs that account, and he opened up the old mailbox and said, hey, you know, this is what we do. We're doing a podcast, so hit me with some mailbag questions. We are obviously super excited because we got some great questions. And I'm kind of just going to, you know, run these questions by you guys, and no specific order. If you got an answer, of course, jump in. And, of course, my favorite question that I've ever heard. This is the best question. I'm not kidding you. This is the best question that we could possibly have. Pope Francis was in, you know, the United States last week. You know, basically shut down the city of Philadelphia for a while, and it shut down New York City, and it was a phenomenon. Arnie, my question to you, and it's not really my question. It comes from 50 Shades of Jay at JM Ledgewood on Twitter. Arnie is the Pope elite.
He's absolutely elite. I went to 11 years of Catholic school, and the teachings, a lot of what was taught was outdated and got, you know, it got very old very fast for a lot of people, and he's, you know, teaching a message, I guess. That's pretty great. And people are actually interested in him. I have all these people, even people who are atheists, it's about how he's the kind of person you need as leader of the church. So yes, the Pope is absolutely elite.
I'll piggyback on that, Tolles. And my answer for 50 Shades of Jay is that the Pope is as elite as 50 Shades of Jay's mustache. So, you know, if you're on Twitter, you know, you can go look up 50 Shades of Jay, and there you go. That's my answer.
Okay, so now Flacco elite? Joe Flacco is elite, but we'll get to that on a different day. So moving on, these questions are pretty much, I mean, as you can imagine, they're definitely a lot more Browns-centric with, you know, football season in full gear. Anybody that listens, sorry if I butcher your name, but Chris Baccia at Smash453, great Twitter handle. He asked the guys, Bernie Kosar talks about not having a winning culture, so who actually knows how to implement one and then push forward?
Certainly not Mike Pettine or Ray Farmer or even Jimmy Haslam at this point. Urban Meyer?
Yeah, that was going to be my answer too.
I mean, I said this the other week on Twitter and I got hammered for it. And I think a lot of people take me more serious than I am sometimes, but I do believe this one. If I own the Browns and it goes bad this year, and you know, we all think it is going to go bad, I would, you know, if I'm Jimmy Haslam, I'd take a Brinks truck full of money. I drive down to Columbus and I throw it on Urban's desk and I say, here you go. All yours, you know, I'll give you whatever you want, come to Cleveland. And, you know, a lot of people say, you know, number one, well, I don't want you to take, you know, him away from the Buckeyes, and that's a good point. But number two, you know, he'll never come to the Browns. And, you know, look, Rex Ryan went to Buffalo. Nobody ever thought that was going to happen. You know, when you throw enough money at somebody, they're going to be interested. Nick Saban coached the Dolphins. I mean, like, the Dolphins have the worst fans in the NFL, and they got Nick Saban because they threw money at him. And Urban grew up in Ashtabula. He grew up a Browns fan. He cares about the team. I think a lot of it will depend on how the Buckeyes play this year, if they can win another national title. If they win another one, what else does he have to accomplish at the college level? He won two at Florida. He'll have won two at his alma mater. And, you know, does he have that drive? And I know he's had health issues and he's battled with stress and anxiety. And so I don't know if he has the drive to be an NFL coach, and I do know that he's in a great situation in Columbus, but man, shit, if he has the drive to coach in the NFL, the Browns, you would think, would be the most appealing team to him, because if you could turn the Browns around after winning three or four national championships in college, you're like the best coach ever. Ever.
Get the man a statue.
Exactly.
Alright, we'll move on now to Dog for Press 2020. I'll root for you, Dog. He asks, can you see us drafting a running back next season or stick with the current guys we got? You know, the Browns need a strong running game to make it to the playoffs. I may disagree with that, but anybody want to take up that question?
After this past game, I don't think so. Duke Johnson was great as a weapon, you know, both receiving and running the ball. And, I mean, Crowell showed flashes of what he can do. I've always thought he was talented. He just needs time to put it together because he's young.
Okay, Adam?
Yeah, you know, I agree. Crow's got talent. He struggles seeing the field sometimes. And, you know, Duke, you know, the big thing with Duke is, can he stay healthy? You know, he's such a small guy. I feel like every time he gets tackled, somebody's going to break him in half. So can he stay on the field? If he can, then you're really fine. And, you know, maybe you go out and get a free agent, a veteran guy. I'm not sold on Robert Turbin at all. I mean, at all. You know, he's under 4 yards per carry in his career. And put him behind this offensive line and good luck. I mean, I'm not saying he's a bad running back, but he got to run behind Marshawn Lynch for a really long time, and he's a change of pace back, and you would expect him to have some kind of success with that. So, you know, I don't think Turbin is the answer by any means, but hey, we'll see. I mean, I'm so far past predicting what this team will draft and how they'll draft that it's such a crapshoot anyway. Who knows?
Yeah, it's one of those things. The draft's a funny little animal sometimes because you just don't know what you're going to get. Last question comes from Matt Koger. Not sure if that's how you say it, but he still wants to know why the Browns think it was a good idea to take a backup player in Cam Irving. You know, obviously, I've talked about how the talent in Cleveland is low. There aren't a lot of playmakers there. Why is it a good idea to take a backup lineman
It's not.
Yeah. They probably just went with best player available at that point. That's all I can really think of.
Yeah, and, you know, look, that's a great thing to do. I could spend about 5 hours on this, and obviously I won't, but you can only do best player available if you're a good team and you don't have holes, period. Like, period. We had so many holes going into the draft that, you know, you have to draft somebody at those positions or else, you know, you're screwed. And if you don't address everything by the end of free agency, you've got to address it in the draft. And so for us to say, hey, you know what, we feel like we're good everywhere else, so let's just take a backup offensive lineman in the first round, like, you know, we worked so hard to get those two first-round picks, and, you know, we all get so excited for so long about, oh, we got two first-round picks, and this is the year we really turn around, and then we use the second one on a backup offensive lineman. I mean, that you can't get much less of a playmaker draft than taking a defensive tackle with your first pick and a backup offensive lineman with your second pick in the first round. But again, these guys, they don't value playmakers. So, you know, Matt, I'm with you, man. I have no idea why they would think that's a good idea.
All right, guys. Well, that was our mailbag portion on the Hartville Sports Cleveland podcast. We definitely appreciate all the listeners out there, and hope you keep coming back. We're having a good time doing this, and we'll be back next week to talk Browns, Cavs, Indians, Ohio State, Buckeyes, whatever's on the mind. You know, keep filling up the Twitter feed at HFS Cleveland on Twitter, and you can also find us at HartfileSports.com. Adam's usually putting up a few columns a week, dishing out his opinions. We're going to get Arnie involved as well on the site and the Twitter account. Gentlemen, appreciate you guys, and looking forward to doing this next week.
Hey, thank you.
All right. Yeah. So for my guys, Adam Bennett and Mike Arnold, my name is Mike Tolsma. This was the Hartfile Sports Cleveland podcast on HartfileSports.com.